Before you know it, spring will be here. Serious gardeners are already planning what they're going to plant. Serious gardeners like Aaron Davis.
I grow green beans, I grow potatoes, I grow tomatoes, I grow corn, I grow beets, I grow turnips for my husband's grandmother. She loves my turnip gardens.
You
I grow
go,
herbs,
girl. Wow.
Onions.
I'm impressed.
I'm very impressed.
Aaron was with a group of friends talking about gardening. Friends like Carolyn McCulley.
I do container gardening. By this, I mean I buy one new container every year. Boom, put it out. And when I used to, where I used to live in Maryland, I would have it out. And I felt like I was running a deer salad bar. And they always knew exactly when I was going to have dinner guests over. And they'd munch everything straight down. I'd be like, these are my pathetic little
pots.
There
went your basil.
And Karen Loritz.
When I moved from big concrete jungle of Philadelphia down to Georgia, and we had all this green stuff, I had my husband plop me up a little patch. They only last one season. Yeah. It was just too much work and had too many nasty things.
Mary Cassian likes gardening, but in Canada where she lives, she's been struggling with a certain kind of pest.
This was a bad year for slugs. They kind of sneak up, but you often see their trails.
Oh, mm-hmm. Right. We don't have slugs. We have Japanese beetles. I live in Missouri. And the rule of thumb in Missouri is if you see one Japanese beetle, 10,000 of his little friends are already there. They can turn your crops to lace in one day.
Every pest usually has some contribution to the ecosystem, but I have yet to figure it out about slugs. I mean, what is their benefit?
Today on Revive Our Hearts, we'll continue talking about a garden and a dangerous invader that threatened that garden. More dangerous than a slug or a Japanese beetle. This group of friends got together to talk about the workbook True Woman 101, Divine Design. It was written by Mary Cassian and our host, Nancy Lee DeMoss. We're about to hear the part of the conversation these friends had about True Woman 101. And keep in mind, this is less an interview like you usually hear on Revive Our Hearts, and more of a conversation with a lot of give and take. I think it will provide some very important things for you to think about. Here's Nancy.
Okay, I got a really important theological question here.
Mm. Oh, wait, I have more bug story.
It's a bug's life.
Garden of Eden, paradise. Do you think they had slugs and Japanese beetles?
Oh, no.
Mm-mm. I don't think
they are definitely the result
of
the fall.
They are definitely.
Right. Yeah. Mosquitoes and stinking spiders.
Oh, no,
okay,
but
here's the point I would like to make.
It's true.
And that is, we all agree that in the garden, Genesis 1, Genesis 2, it was paradise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know for sure whether those critters were there and whether, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder and Adam and Eve just love slugs.
We don't know.
We do know that, get away from the critters for a moment. Talk about the people there, Adam and Eve, this first couple, first marriage, first man, first woman. It was paradise for their relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. For their relationship with each other and with God. It is hard to imagine.
No holes in the leaves.
No Swiss cheese. Yeah.
No Swiss cheese.
In the leaves. Or in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, something has clearly changed.
Clearly.
Genesis chapter 3.
Clearly.
We all know the story, but I think it's just really helpful to go back and reflect on it from time to time. Because in Genesis 1 and 2, you have this awesome, amazing, every word in there is positive. It's blessing, fruitful, good, wonderful, you know. I mean, this perfect paradise for this couple. And not only right with each other, great relationship with each other, but great relationship with God. Oh, no hindrances, no barriers, no fear, no shame, no guilt. Mm-hmm. Then you come to chapter 3 of Genesis. Mm. And from that, it's something drastic happens, something really stark that paints this really negative picture until you get to the New Testament and to the last three chapters of the Bible where you have restoration of what is of paradise. So what happened? Genesis chapter 3, we have the entrance of a critter, a snake.
A real pest.
The garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not just slugs or Japanese beetles or things that destroy our physical gardens, but a spiritual being that was set out to destroy and to undermine and to dismantle all the good that God had put there.
And he came there with a plan, crafty, and he was there just to upheaval all of this beautiful paradise, this garden kind of atmosphere right there in the midst.
He didn't just want to destroy crops.
He wanted to do much more damage than that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But here's the thing. He didn't look like a pest.
Right. No, he didn't.
Didn't look
like
an intruder.
He looked like one of the other created beings.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, with the curse, he's commanded to crawl on his belly. So perhaps we don't know what he looked like prior
could
to that.
Could have been upright, or we
upright
just don't know.
Or had some limbs or something. Certainly not as snaky and creepy.
It was appealing.
It must have been quite beautiful, right. Really, yeah. I would imagine.
Because if it were today and we saw a snake come into our view, we'd be running or shrieking.
On the chair and screaming.
Somehow Eve wasn't afraid. Mm-hmm. She didn't screech. Mm-hmm. There was this conversation. I mean, you know, people are saying today this is all folklore, but it's not. It's true. Sure. And he approached the woman. We're talking about true womanhood here. So if we're going to understand how we got to where we are today and why we have the issues we do, we've got to go back to this moment of temptation. Mm-hmm. He approaches her with a, and we know the serpent is Satan embodied in a body of a serpent, but he has this deceptive sales pitch.
He has the first question in all of Scripture. Yeah. And the first question is to cast doubt on God's character and his truth and his word. And that's been the same assault from there on. It's one trick, but it works.
Has God said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't you think you know better than him? Is he holding out on you?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, and then he says, you could be like God. And I think maybe one of the reasons he went to Eve as a woman, because that's another way of saying what you are isn't quite enough. And don't we as women all sometimes have that sense? And so there's this moment in Eve's mind, like, maybe I'm not enough. Maybe I need to do or be or say to be more like God.
The first sense of inadequacy in a woman.
Insecurity.
Or how about this? He comes to Eve and she's perked up because now she has something that her husband doesn't have.
Mm. Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So she's up and one on her man.
And someone paying a whole lot of attention to her.
That's
Can't that be dangerous?
Right. Yeah, that's dangerous.
Yeah, well, it's very attractive. Certainly is attractive. And, I mean, Scripture tells us that she was pulled in by it. She didn't go, oh, I'm going to sin. Mm-hmm. She was just tricked. Sure. She was tricked by it. She was led along into the sales pitch, into buying something that she thought looked really great. And she swallowed it hook, line, and sinker.
And I want to just explore how that happened and why. I mean, you know, we know this passage and it's familiar, but sometimes we just have glazed over eyes with these familiar passages. And I think it bears exploring because God had posted one keep-off sign in this whole amazing garden.
Yeah,
just one.
Yeah.
So she had all this other stuff to enjoy. How does Satan succeed in getting her to go where God said, don't go?
You know, as a woman, I can just so relate with Eve. I'm not sure I would have made a different choice. I probably would have. I can just see from her woman's heart and understanding what makes me tick, even the things that I don't like about what makes me tick, how that happened. And yes, she was deceived. It wasn't an intentional choice, but just relational.
You know, comes to her as engaging.
Sure, absolutely.
What did she find so compelling about his pitch?
He twisted truth.
But why was that compelling to her?
It had enough truth in it to be like, yeah, I can respond to that. But now,
I see your point.
Yeah.
I think because women are relators.
It was a need to please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like to relate and we're created for relationship. And so if you come to me and you tell me something and and I can see the truth in it, I'm drawn to that.
Mm-hmm. And he appeals to her creatureliness. You know, it looks good. It's going to taste good. And now let's go down to your inner core. It's desirable for wisdom and to make you like what you aren't right now.
Don't we women all want things that look good? Mm-hmm. I know I like things
it
that taste
attractive.
Good.
Yeah. How about lack of contentment?
Sure, lack of contentment
because, you know, it just says, well, you'll be just like God.
And then she thinks,
you know, I'm not satisfied here.
Maybe what I am is not enough.
And that was Satan's assault. He wanted to be just like God, too.
Right.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When that's how he became, got thrown out of his responsibility
felt
in heaven.
Like, yeah, felt not like lightning from heaven.
So he kind of planted the seed of doubt, really, is what he did. Is just introduced. He didn't come out and out and say, God isn't good.
Sure.
It's so subtle. It's like, well did he really say that? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. And God's ways are too restrictive. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem fair.
And he has you all boxed in and, you know.
Or you could be so much more.
Yeah.
If you did it, if you took things into your hand, you know, is he really looking out for you as much as he's looking out for himself?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Didn't he appeal to that thing that we've talked about so much in the weeks of this study about a woman's desire for control and just, you can control the situation. You can determine who you are even more than God. Mm-hmm. I know that's my desire for control sometimes leads me to entertain the snakes.
Or consequences. Like, nothing bad's going to happen. Right. Like, what do you really think is going to happen here? Nothing bad's going to happen.
Yeah. Which was strictly contrary to what God had said.
You surely aren't going to die. Oh, right. Come on. Exactly. It can't be that bad. I mean, we fall for that all the time.
Sure. And you'll experience amazing benefits.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Double
the
pleasure, none of the guilt. Right.
Yeah. He casts the doubt and then he completely contradicts. You will not surely die. And I wonder if she even really understood what death was. I mean, in paradise.
They'd never seen it.
Probably was a very abstract concept. So it's like, I guess whatever that thing is, it won't happen. Yeah. And instead, you'll be like God. He's holding out on you. Yeah. He's holding out on you.
Her question should have been, not only her response, but her question should have been, how does he know what God said?
Mm-hmm.
When I was there and listening to what God said, you know, she should have questioned that. But of course, we never question the bearer of the news as contrary to what God says, right? Mm-hmm. We always say, oh, well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. When God specifically has it, you know, pinned out for us in his word.
And it questions God's right as a creator to say, I've given you all this. And this I restrict for my sovereign purposes, which I don't always tell you what they are because you're the creature.
We don't like that. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I don't like keep off signs or don't go there. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I find in my own spirit that when there's a don't go there, it makes me want to go there more because I don't like feeling like someone else is putting restrictions on what I can and can't do.
Yeah, I sometimes say I don't mind doing what's right as long as somebody doesn't tell me I have to.
That's right.
Yeah. Or that I can't. Yeah. It's rebellion.
Right, that's what we have ingrained. Can you imagine, you know, with my little kids, I can have a jar of Oreo cookies right there in the middle of the table and have maybe a peanut butter jelly sandwich right here. It says, you may have all the cookies you want, but don't touch this peanut butter and jelly. I have shifted their attention from the cookie jar.
You can use vegetables as an alternative.
Yeah, to the peanut butter and jelly.
Psychology.
You know, because there's something appealing about what you said I can't have.
Yeah. So Satan says, you know, he makes it look attractive. It does look attractive. It was attractive. Mm-hmm. But then he makes it look harmless. It looks promising. She buys into it. Of course, if she could have seen that, you know, if it looked like it was just crawling with worms and rotten, she wouldn't have gone for it.
Right.
It looked so attractive. But then takes a bite, you find, you know, it is crawling with worms, so to speak. And the rest, as they say, is history. Mm. But, Aaron, I'm so glad you pointed out that, you know, we would have likely made the same choice.
Oh, I'm such a daughter of Eve. And I prove it by repeating her mistakes
so often. Exactly. So how does Satan tempt us today as women in ways similar to what he did Eve? And how do we respond
to
him?
Well, I find his tactics haven't changed all that much in my life.
The script is the same. No. The script is just the same. And it's the same for all the women I talk to at my conferences. It's all the same thing. Well, I didn't think anything bad would happen. It wasn't going to happen to me. I thought my life would be better. You know, I thought God's rules were a little bit silly. I thought I could make the choices. And it looked so good. It looked so promising. Yeah. You know, that affair looked so good. That romance looked so good. Going, you know, there looked so good.
Well, the current lie to our culture, you know, is the fact that there is no judgment. There's no death. There's no hell. There's nobody's going to hold you accountable. So just make up your own rules and do what you want. And then inside the church,
good. You should not deny yourself.
Right.
Don't let yourself be denied.
Yeah, so the idea of taking away the justice, the holiness of God, that's not a component that we have to deal with. You will not surely die. And that's the cultural lie. And then specifically within the church, it's like, hey, you're forgiven. So, you know, you can like just keep on sinning. There's no consequences. That there's not going to be any discipline of the Father who loves us. That, you know, we're not going to hear the heavy steps as he comes up like, I told you to go to sleep. You keep postponing obedience. And so one aspect that affects us here in the church. And it's just that same idea that God's judgment isn't worthy of our respect or consideration.
You know, a tactic that Satan used that I can so relate to me still is what Satan did is he made it all about Eve for a minute. He gave her a stage, a platform to think it's all about me. And sin in my own life is so often traced to
it's
just momentarily forgetting that it's not about me. And when I think it is about me, I give myself the right to behave any way I want to behave. And that's what Satan did with Eve.
Sure.
Here's your stage, Eve. Invent the life you want to. Let's talk about you.
Yeah.
And when I get to talking too much about me, it's ugly. Usually.
And we do forget or ignore consequences. I'm thinking about Psalm chapter 10. Three times it says, he says in his heart, this time at foolish people who sin, make sinful choices. He says in his heart, I shall not be moved. Mm-hmm. Throughout all generations, I shall not meet adversity. I'm going to be able to continue my life as it is. He says in his heart, God has forgotten. He has hidden his face. He will never see it. Mm-hmm. And then verse 13, he says in his heart, you will not call to account. Mm-hmm. And isn't that, you know, we may not be consciously saying that at the moment of temptation, right. but if we really were thinking, I will give account, God hasn't forgotten. He does see. That's the fear mm-hmm. of the Lord, living in the constant conscious awareness of God's presence. How would that keep us
and
from sinning?
And he is the creator. I'm the creature. Yeah, this is not about me. This is about him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if those are the boundaries that he's established, who am I? I mean, we don't fear. We don't tremble, I think, at who God is anymore. There's just this casualness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Too casual.
Too casual, like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's all about me. He'll forgive me. There's no fear in terms of understanding that he indeed is God and I am not.
You know, in Galatians, where it has that the sowing and reaping principle, mm-hmm. goes back mm-hmm. to the garden. Only thing that I do know about garden seeds is that whatever seed...
That's right.
You plant in the garden, if it's a green bean or whatever.
Plant a tomato, you're not going to get
You're going to get
cucumber.
That's
tomato.
Right, whatever's planted. And so the seed was dropped here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now we are reaping that mm-hmm. crop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it wasn't for the mercy and the redemptive work of Jesus Christ, our crop would have died a long time.
Yeah.
But we forget about the sowing and reaping principle. Obedience, disobedience requires the consequences. So we have to obey. And so it started in the garden. There was an opportunity for the woman to tell serpent, you know, that's not what I heard. Goodbye.
Or let me talk to Adam about it.
Right, mm-hmm. yes.
Or let me pray about it.
Let me
talk to the Lord about it.
Let me just check this out.
Or was she out of place?
Yeah.
Was she out of place?
Yeah.
In this part right here? It would be nice to find out geographically where she was.
Well, I mean, Adam was standing right next to her, and there's no consultation, and there's no we're in this together.
Right.
Or there's mm-hmm. no my behavior impacts other people here. Mm-hmm. It's just all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And... And that's just such a lie and such a temptation for women to believe that this is my behavior isn't going to impact others. This is an isolated thing. What I do is for my happiness, and I'm the only one who's going to be impacted, mm-hmm. and there won't be any consequences to speak
right.
of. Yeah.
Which is a big, big lie.
Oh, I see it all the time.
Women
in affairs, I mean, just all the time in terms of the choices
right.
that women
I always
make.
Tell people, women, that I'm counseling them, and they're really struggling with this whole idea about submission and all the rest of that stuff, and God is handicapping me, and he's squelching my happiness and all the rest of that stuff. And she says, what I want to do is my own business. I says, it's unfortunate. But your business is everybody's business.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And
it's
it
for sure God's
everybody.
Business.
That's
and it's
right.
for sure
yeah.
God's business.
So you have to make a decision. And so we just go on and have this conversation. But they have this idea, what I do is my business. I can do whatever I have because there's not going to be a time of harvest. There will be a time of harvest.
But women
yeah.
are
was
such,
the originator of that idea.
Yeah, yeah. We're such influencers that when we make decisions, it influences and impacts mm-hmm. those around mm-hmm. us. And this certainly happened in the garden.
Yes, mm-hmm. right.
Yeah. So how does the cultural ideal today for womanhood tempt us to fall for Satan's deception? Tie those two together. We're talking about sin in general, temptation in general, but as it relates to true womanhood or womanhood, culture has an ideal. And how does that set us up to, if we buy into that ideal, to fall for Satan's deception?
Well, I think the issue of beauty is one area because as I began to study the Word, I realized that the only one whose glory and beauty is eternal is the Lord, and he's promised that we're going to wither away. I mean, the very fact of the fall meant decay and death entered, meaning from that second forward, we are dying every single second of our life, and we're just decaying. And so one of the areas of assault, and I struggle with it, I know we've all joked about it as we've gotten ready here to do our hair and our makeup, is just like, oh, you know, what's happening?
Put away that 10 times magnification.
Exactly. Yeah. And we fight against it. I fight against it, just the idea that I am supposed to decay because in my humanity, in my humility, I slowly crumble.
But we're always looking for this anti-aging thing
exactly.
that will keep
oh, yeah.
us perennially,
yeah.
you know, 19.
I've spent tons of money on that. And so the idea is that youthfulness is better because it's that eternal value, which, you know, theologians have speculated that Adam and Eve were probably young adults in their prime. And that would have been their perfection. That's where they would have stayed. And it wouldn't have been this aging process that kicks in.
No
but
gray
we
hair.
Fight that. Yeah. We fight it because we don't want to acknowledge our creatureliness that leads us from dust to dust and back to dust.
Beauty's always... played a huge role. You asked how it's affecting women today. I think beauty, you know, Eve was drawn to beauty, wanting a version maybe of beauty she felt like she didn't possess. And isn't that traced to a lot of sin we're seeing in women's lives now? Anything to be beautiful, anything to feel beautiful,
to
anyone
be
to be told you're beautiful.
To feel affirmation.
That's right. I'll take it any way I can get it from anyone who wants to say it to me, as long as they will affirm
especially
my
if
beauty.
It's a good-looking guy.
Online.
Yeah. Yeah. Good-looking serpent.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And what about independence? I think that really would have appealed to me. My mom says that I was just had an independent streak. You know, by the time I was two, I was slapping her away. Don't touch me. Let me do it. I'll do it myself. I'll do it. I'll, you know, let
but
me.
Hasn't that been drilled into us for as long as any of us have been alive?
It was born into me.
Yeah.
But I think culture promotes that.
Oh, yeah. Certainly.
And isn't it
really
still tied
does.
To our sins as women
sure is.
So often?
Yeah, it almost doesn't matter what your temperament or personality type is. Once you reach about 18 months and you figured out you can walk and you get picked up, any child you pick up does that karate chop to the throat. And you're like, okay, I'll put you down.
Oh,
you know?
There are some cuddlers. But on their own terms.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, it doesn't matter if they're willful or not. There's going to be that idea of I want to be put down because now I know how to walk, you know.
And, I mean, God created us, I think, you know, in terms of development and maturation in terms of where there's a sense in which independence is a healthy thing, but there's also a very unhealthy thing there. And I think that Satan was really appealing to that, that part of Eve, you know, that was the part where she exerted an independence that was unhealthy. It wasn't because she turned her back on interdependence. She turned her back on relationship with Adam and the two of them, the mutuality and the we're in this together and my decisions are going to impact you and we need to talk about this and we need to go to God and what do you think we should be doing or looking to him for guidance and directions. I mean, there were so many temptations that were so subtle and so undermined who God created them to be as male and female. And that's what's so fascinating to me is this isn't just an ordinary temptation. This really speaks to who they are as man and woman and really what appeals to a woman the most and what is most tempting. And really, it does play into what tempts us to this very day.
That's Mary Cassian. She's been talking with Nancy Lee DeMoss, along with their friends Aaron Davis, Carolyn McCulley, and Karen Loritz. That conversation is based on the book Nancy and Mary wrote called True Woman 101, Divine Design. It's a workbook that will help you consider what God's Word has to say about being a woman. It will help you ask the Lord how He wants you to live day by day as a woman. Heather Platinod is a Revive Our Hearts listener who visited us not long ago and told us how this workbook affected her.
True Woman 101 Divine Design is an 8-week Bible study. Grab a group of girlfriends and understand what biblical womanhood is. The more that I have understood why God created me as a woman and how I am to function as a woman in the body of Christ, how it's changed my marriage. I had a fabulous marriage before I went through True Woman 101 or went to the True Woman Conference. But God has taken it to another level of amazingness because I have understood my role as a wife, my role as a daughter of the King more. And watching my husband respond to my changes, he always says to me, if you want to go to True Woman, fine. You can go to anything Revive Our Heart does because when you come back, you are a completely transformed woman. So he is completely supportive of any time I want to be involved with anything with Revive Our Hearts or the True Woman movement.
We'd like to send you the workbook Heather has been telling you about. When you donate any amount to Revive Our Hearts, we'll send you True Woman 101 from Mary Cassian and Nancy Lee DeMoss. Ask for it when you call 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Or visit reviveourhearts.com. Well, tomorrow we'll pick back up on the conversation we began today with Nancy, Mary, and their friends. We'll hear how the events in the Garden of Eden are still affecting relationships today. Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy Lee DeMoss is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.